Welcome to SNC's podcast series, SNC Critical Insights. I'm Krishna Varagavan, a partner in SNC's M&A practice. With me today is Ari Blout, a partner in our finance and restructuring group. Ari is also co-head of the firm's U.S. credit and leverage finance practice. Today, Ari and I will be discussing PIPE transactions. To start things off, Ari, could you explain to our listeners what a PIPE deal is and why they are of interest these days?
I'm happy to, Krishna. As we've seen, COVID-19 has created serious challenges for many businesses. Companies are dealing with disruption to supply chains, declines in demand, and pressures on receivables. Much of this is unprecedented. It has also given rise to real liquidity issues. One way businesses have managed through this is by drawing down on their revolvers and in many cases establishing new facilities to fund operations. A PIPE transaction is another solution for addressing liquidity needs. PIPE stands for Private Investment in Public Equity. Basically, a PIPE is a privately negotiated deal in which one or more investors buy securities directly from a public company. The terms of a PIPE will be tailored to the particular deal, but a PIPE always involves the sale of equity or equity-linked securities. Equity-linked securities include instruments like convertible preferred stock, convertible notes, or warrants. Because a PIPE is exempt from registration under the Securities Act, it can be accomplished relatively quickly. In tough economic times, investors tend to see PIPEs as an attractive way to put capital to work. For companies dealing with unusual volatility and challenges in the lending markets, PIPEs can offer an attractive financing opportunity. With that background, Krishna, could you speak to some of the unique advantages of a PIPE?
Yes, and thanks for that overview, Ari. Today, for a company dealing with market headwinds, a PIPE is a clear signal that smart money is backing the issuer. In addition, a PIPE can be completed more discreetly and inexpensively than a registered offering. This is because a PIPE only needs to be disclosed after definitive deal documents are signed. And perhaps most importantly, in this environment, a PIPE can fund quickly. With that background, let's spend some time discussing specific transactional elements. I'm thinking of things like financial and governance terms of PIPEs, as well as the related approvals that may be needed. In my experience, having a good handle on these at the outset goes a long way to achieving smooth execution. Ari, could you talk through some of the financial elements of PIPEs, and then I'll address some of the governance and potential approval issues.
Sounds good, Krishna. One thing that attracts investors to PIPEs involving equity-linked securities is that they offer a fixed return through a preset dividend rate or coupon. However, issuers focused on liquidity should know that many PIPEs include a payment in kind or PIK feature. This allows the company to pay dividends or interest in additional preferred stock or by increasing the principal amount of the convertible notes. The decision whether to pay cash or PIK will be up to the company and the investor, although sometimes the PIK is time limited. PIPEs can also have interesting conversion and redemption features. The conversion feature is what allows the investor to convert the equity-linked security into common stock. Sometimes this convertibility is immediate, other times it is not. Convertibility is an important element of the potential upside of a PIPE. Many PIPEs also include a redemption feature that is tied to a negotiated maturity date or other trigger event, such as a change of control or asset sale of the issuer. Sometimes the trigger event will give rise to a make-whole premium or other protections, such as the ability to participate in the deal premium or on an as-converted basis. Another element of PIPEs is the downside protection they offer. The most basic form of this protection is seniority, in that convertible notes and preferred stock are more senior in the capital structure than common equity. Another form of protection investors can negotiate is anti-dilution terms. For example, the PIPE may have a built-in adjustment to the instrument's conversion rate if the issuer later makes a dilutive offering down the road. A final interesting feature of PIPEs is their liquidity profile. Because PIPE securities are privately placed as opposed to being sold in the registered public offering, they are initially restricted securities under the Securities Act in the case of an equity instrument. This means they cannot be freely sold until either a required holding period has passed or the issuer has filed an effective registration statement for the resale of securities. For this reason, PIPE investors typically negotiate for registration rights.
Ari, for our listeners that may be less familiar with registration rights, could you explain what those are and how they're relevant to the liquidity of a PIPE instrument?
Sure. A PIPE investor will typically seek two types of registration rights: demand registration rights and piggyback registration rights. Demand registration rights require the issuer to register the investor's resale of shares under a registration statement at the demand of the investor. Piggyback registration rights, on the other hand, allow the investor to join in on an offering that the issuer is registering on its own or which another investor has decided to exercise its demand rights for. Because preparing a registration statement can be costly and time-consuming, registration rights are a point of negotiation in any pipe. In this environment, companies should be especially thoughtful about the time periods in which they agree to register resales. I think that about covers the key financial elements of a pipe deal. But I also want to say a word about the need for diligence to confirm that the pipe will not have unintended financial consequences. Depending on the terms of the pipe, it may result in a change in control under credit documents or other agreements, and this should be diligenced up front. Credit documents should be reviewed in any event to confirm the PIPE complies with any restrictions on the use of proceeds and other restrictive provisions in the credit agreements. With that, let me turn it over to you, Krishna, to cover some governance and approval aspects.
Thanks, Ari. Just like the financial elements you discussed, the governance terms of a PIPE deal will also be bespoke. They will be informed by the size of the investment, how long the investor will remain in the stock, and how all parties feel about the investor's active oversight of the business. A key part of this equation is board appointment rights. It's fairly typical for a PIPE investor to obtain board representation that's proportionate to its stake. So, for example, if the investor is buying 10% of the equity of a company, 10% of the company's board seats will be allocated to the investor. These rights are sometimes supplemented by the ability to have a non-voting observer participate in board sessions. As you might expect, these rights fall away when the investor reduces its stake below certain thresholds. In addition to board rights, the investor will have voting and sometimes veto rights. The voting rights will typically be on an as-converted basis to common stock, and veto rights tend to cover corporate actions, such as incurring debt, that negatively impact the PIPE investment. Notably, PIPE issuers sometimes ask investors to sign standstill agreements as part of the PIPE. The standstill restricts the investor from taking certain action to increase influence over the company, such as buying additional shares. These restrictions are meant to minimize the disruption of having a new and significant investor. An issuer may also seek to lock up the investor for a required holding period. A lockup can also limit who the investor can eventually sell out to, including by restricting sales to stockholder activists. The last thing I'd like to discuss today are the approvals that may be needed for a PIPE deal. Perhaps the most important of these are the stock exchange approval rules. Both the NYSE and NASDAQ require a company to obtain stockholder approval before it can make certain equity issuances, including issuances of 20% or more of the company's outstanding common stock. The requirements are complex and are changing real time. Earlier this month, and the NYSE waived some aspects of its shareholder approval rules through June 30th in view of the extraordinary nature of the current circumstances. Specifically, one exception to the NYSE's 20% rule exempts bona fide private placements to multiple purchasers, none of whom require more than 5% of the company's pre-sale common stock or voting power, so long as the offer satisfies minimum price requirements. The waiver eliminates the multiple purchaser and 5% ownership voting power limit, with the intent of allowing companies to more easily raise private financing. The financing must also comply with the NYSE's related party transaction rule, if applicable. Notably, the NYSE relief also waives the shareholder approval triggers tied to the size of a related party issuance, so long as minimum price and committee approval processes are followed and the proceeds are not used to fund related party transactions. The total effect of these changes is to put the NYSE and NASDAQ on par with respect to these issues through June 30th. Both the NYSE and NASDAQ also have exceptions for emergency issuances made to preserve financial viability. Ultimately, given the fluidity and complexity of the current situation, it's important to involve counsel early to assess whether a shareholder approval will be required.
That's a good point, Krishna. I'd add that there are ways to structure PIPEs to avoid pre-funding shareholder approval. One workaround is for the issuer to cap any conversion or voting features at 19.9% until shareholder approval is obtained. The mechanisms for including caps also involve complex rules and precedent and may require consultation with the relevant exchange.
Yes, there certainly is room for creativity here. Another potential trigger of shareholder approvals to keep in mind is the company's organizational documents. A PIPE issuer should confirm it has sufficient headroom under its charter to execute the deal. This analysis needs to account for the company's outstanding shares, the shares issuable in the PIPE, and the shares reserved for equity awards and other convertible securities. In the case of preferred stock PIPE, the issuer will also need to confirm its charter permits the relevant preferred terms. In addition to possible stockholder approvals, a PIPE may also require third-party approvals or clearances. Depending on various factors, such as the size of the PIPE and the rights of the investor, antitrust clearance may be required. In the U.S., if an HSR filing is required, the PIPE cannot be funded until a 30-day statutory waiting period has elapsed, unless the regulatory authorities grant early termination. In addition to antitrust clearances, for some industries, particularly the financial services sector, industry-specific approvals may be required. Also, depending on the domicile of the investor and the industry of the issuer, CFIUS jurisdiction may be implicated. COVID-19 has impacted the timeline for obtaining many regulatory approvals, and this should be considered when evaluating the timing of a PIPE. Lastly, I'd like to talk about the board process for approving a PIPE transaction. If the PIPE is an arm's-length transaction with a financial investor, the board will be protected by the business judgment rule so long as the board acted with due care and without self-interest in approving the PIPE. Thus, it is imperative for the board to be well-informed of the terms of the securities, particularly any conversion features before approval. A more challenging situation is presented if the PIPE investor is already a significant stakeholder, and particularly if the investor already has board representation. In these circumstances, it's essential to observe best practice regarding disclosure and procedural safeguards to mitigate potential conflicts. Like any other significant transaction, the importance of a good board process cannot be understated when it comes to a PIPE deal.
Thanks for that overview, Krishna. I think one takeaway is that while PIPEs can provide a fast and cost-effective source of capital, there are many legal considerations to keep in mind. And by thinking these through early, investor and companies can benefit from a well-established financing market.
Agreed. And that brings us to the end of our discussion today. Thanks again for joining us and listening to S&C Clinical Insights. For more information about our practice, please visit us on the web at www.cellcrom.com. We'll